This is episode 15 of the Great Speech Podcast on how to win your next argument without losing your cool.
It's a Great Speech Podcast for the public speakers. We're going way down deep to look at what makes a communicator. We'll look at all different topics from the bottom to the top. So get your mind free of all the distractions and please listen up.
It's the Great Speech Podcast.
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 Thanks, Dad. Hey, welcome back, my great communicators. How you guys doing? I hope you're well. It's just me this week. You know, the last couple of episodes have been interviews, which I really love. You guys seem to enjoy that too. But I thought it was time to rekindle our relationship. You know, that intimate, special bond that you and I have been sharing for the last 15 episodes. So just me alone on this week. And I'm going to be talking to you about how to win arguments. And I know you're listening intently to this one. Let's kick it off, as always, with the quote of the episode. And this week, I've chosen one from Jean-Jacques Rousseau, who was an Enlightenment philosopher way back in the day. I think from Geneva, if I remember rightly, but I could be wrong. I did philosophy at university, actually, so I really like my quotes by philosophers. And his quote is, "Insults are arguments employed by those who are in the wrong." Insults are arguments employed by those who are in the wrong, because yes, we are going to be discussing arguments, how to win them. I'm going to give you a couple of techniques. I'm going to give you five different techniques that will help you win your next argument. Now, quick caveat to this one, do not try this at home. Trust me, you do not want to be caught using some psychological manipulation techniques at home in an argument. It will not end well. I speak from personal experience. So yeah, these are just tips that will help you in everywhere else except for at home. Of course, if you have not yet clicked that subscribe button, I know you will definitely want to do so after this episode, because I'm trying to be dropping value bombs and nuggets of communication wisdom, stuff to help you out to become what I always describe as a great communicator, because I firmly believe that it is the great communicators that lead and change the world. And that's what you've got to be aiming to be as well. So make sure you've clicked that subscribe button so you'll get the next episode straight to your device. Also, you know, I run regular webinars. Go to greatspeech.co/webinar. You'll see the link in the show notes. It's a great one called How to Become an Outstanding Public Speaker, Even if you are not a natural performer and without being overwhelmed by fear. Been getting really, really strong positive reviews on it. It seems to really be transforming some people's approach to public speaking. So if you haven't checked it out already, you need to make sure you do that. Before we get going, let's head over to Review Corner. As always, I got a review in here from, this is such a cool name, Toe Rag 15. I don't know what the 15 stands for. Toe Rag 15, thank you for giving me that review. It is much appreciated. And Toe Rag 15 says, "I have the attention span of a squirrel," which is pretty cool. Although actually, I don't normally you talk about attention span of goldfish, right? Or human beings is about 8 or 9 seconds. I don't know what a squirrel's is, but we'll assume it's short. "I have the attention span of a squirrel. I actually managed to listen to a whole podcast and actually use it during my working day. Collar simplistically analyzes human communication, which took the sting out of my fear of larger audiences. Can't wait for the next episode." Thank you so much, Torag15. Got to let me know what the 15 stands for. And here is the next episode. Thank you for leaving that review. Of course, do make sure you leave a review, because I will give you a shout out in one of the following episodes. So thank you very much for that. Okay, so let's get on with the episode. And as I said, we're going to be talking about arguing. And, you know, this is important because as much as, you know, human beings, we, you know, we talk about the fact that it's important to talk things out. We're trying to evolve into rational people that settle our differences honorably. We all know that that's great on the surface. That's great on paper. But in real life, arguments happen, right? My life seems to be surrounded by arguments. You know, I'm a lawyer, of course. So I'm basically arguing all day, whether it's in court, whether it's on paper. Doesn't matter. I'm basically arguing, trying to do it respectfully, of course, but it's basically arguing. Mrs. S and I have been known to have the odd Barney. My children argue like cats and dogs, right? So arguments surround us. You will probably find you might have arguments at work, at home, on the bus, you know, with friends, with strangers, with colleagues. It doesn't matter. We get to the point where even though we, with our best of intentions, want to be accommodating, want to be reasonable, want to talk things out without it descending into arguments, it still happens. And even though arguments can undermine teams, can destroy relationships, can, you know, damage the prospects of our companies, it still happens. So I want to kind of give you a few approaches to arguing. And I'm talking literally about winning the argument, right? This is not an episode of kind of middle of the road, can't we all get along? Yeah, we should. But I'm talking about you want to win that argument, right? You want to be the one that's able to walk away thinking, yes, I got the better of that person in the argument this time. So I'm going to be helping you with a couple of approaches to that that will help you win them. And the thing about an argument to remember as well is that, so an argument is different from a debate or a discussion, right? Because in a debate, there's kind of two sides involved. They, you know, give their best points, take them in turn to express them, and then listen, you know, attentively and respectfully to the other person, right? But that is not an argument, because an argument basically works in the opposite way. One of the problems with arguments is that kind of very often reason vanishes, right? And the emotions take over, and in a way, right or wrong becomes irrelevant. You're not listening to understand the other person's point of view. You're just listening so you can spot an opportunity to jump in and attack, right? So that's kind of the reason that arguments can be so destructive, because, you know, it's almost like you're looking for victory at all costs, you know, victory at the expense of harmony, you know, at the expense of productivity, at the expense of sanity. So that's kind of the why I do not recommend that you go lead your lives looking to go from one argument to the next, because it really is destructive, both for the person who's in the argument with you and for yourself and probably for everybody around you. So this is not an endorsement of arguing, right? That said, there are a few things that could help you achieve a better outcome. So you have that self-satisfaction of, yes, I got this. So here we go. I'm going to give you five different approaches to an argument and winning an argument without losing your cool. Okay, so approach number one is the one I call the rope-a-dope, right? So now the rope-a-dope, for all you non-boxing fans out there, and I am a boxing fan, shout out to the Barnett Boxing crew who may be listening to this. I'm a boxing fan, and back in 1974, Muhammad Ali fought George Foreman. So at the time, Muhammad Ali had lost the belt, so he wasn't the champion. He was fighting George Foreman, who was the champion, and everybody believed that Ali was too old, too slow, and George Foreman was this incredible beast that would just punch his lights out. He'd been destroying everybody in his path with just huge, booming punches, right? And so everyone thought Ali has is to kind of just dance around in the way that Ali's famous for, bouncing on his toes and kind of flitting around, and that's the only way he could win. But in the fight, although that's what everybody expected, including George Foreman, Ali actually stayed on the ropes. He stayed pretty still and just basically let George Foreman use him as a punching bag. And everybody thought, well, that's it. Ali's lost. He's slow. He can't handle it. At some stage, George Foreman's going to knock him out. But in fact, what he was doing was tiring George Foreman out. And eventually, George Foreman got so tired out that by, I think, round 8 or something like that, Ali took the initiative and then knocked him out, mainly because George Foreman was so tired, right? So it's called the rope-a-dope because he kind of roped him in. George Foreman was the dope, and that's how he won the fight. So that's the context, right? That's what rope-a-dope is. I say I had to do that in case you're not boxing fans. And so when you do the rope-a-dope in an argument, what you are doing is this, and it's a little bit counterintuitive, but it's the way Ali did it, right? Is you appear to give ground, first of all. You appear to concede the point. You appear to look as though, you know what, you're on the up. You're the one that's in the right. You're in the ascendancy. And what that does is it basically loosens the person's guard. It almost tires out the energy that they have because they were expecting a real battle and all you're doing is just absorbing the punches. So to do that, you will be saying things like, you know what, you could be right, right? Or I agree with you. Or you know what, a really good one is, if I was in your shoes, I'd probably see it that way too. And you kind of go with what they're saying. You allow them to make their best points. You say, you know, I see the force of that. Actually, I wasn't expecting you to say that. But now that you say it, I understand it. So you kind of draw them in, suck them into this vortex of you are accepting what they say. And it means that they lower their guard. It means that the sting of their best points is kind of taken away because it met no resistance. And then you turn it around and then it's, you know what? I agree with you. If I was in your shoes, I'd probably see it that way too. But have you considered this? And then you give your best points. And because they've dropped their defenses because they were expecting your fight and you didn't immediately give it to them. When you then put your points, they're almost tempted to also be as accommodating as you appeared to be when you first agreed with them. And they'll start saying, oh, okay, I guess I can see that as well. And then you just keep going, keep jabbing, sticking and moving and 1-2s and punch them until they are agreeing with you. So that is the rope-a-dope. Give ground initially to help them lower their defenses, to get them far less kind of, to take away the energy of their attacks, absorb them without going down, right? Ali didn't go down, so you don't go down, you don't give up, but you give a little bit of ground and then you bring in your points and gradually you kind of wear them down because actually their energy has gone in that first wave of attack. It's called the rope-a-dope. It does work. Try it out. Let me know what you think. But don't do it at home. Trust me, not going to work. Okay, so that was rope-a-dope number one. Approach number two is actually taken from the way that FBI negotiators work to defuse situations, right? So, you know, the classic FBI negotiator, somebody's, you know, got hostages and wants, you know, £2 million or whatever it is. And the FBI negotiator has to try and resolve the situation without loss of life, hopefully without having to give them the $2 million or whatever it is, right? So it's an approach the FBI take. And it's actually a 5-section approach. So the first thing they teach them is what's called active listening, which is you don't immediately respond with your own point or your own attack. You just let them speak uninterrupted, right? And you make kind of nods and sounds and gestures of acknowledgement. So all you're doing is acknowledging and allowing them to speak, allowing them to vent, allowing them to say what they want to say without the interruption. That's the key, right? So you're in the listening mode because, and don't forget, inside you're probably going to be tearing your guts apart because, you know, you've got so many things you want to say because, you know, they're wrong about this, they're wrong about that, and this other point they haven't considered. But your first step is not to do that because then it just becomes very adversarial. So that's the first step. Second step is what's called empathizing, right? So again, what you're doing is you're not fighting back when you eventually do respond, but you're showing your appreciation of their point of view. It's a little bit like the rope-a-dope, right? Where we were saying, oh, I see your point of view. You're kind of using that. It doesn't matter the words you say, but you're really trying to empathize to say, look, I don't judge you for what you say. I understand where you're coming from. It makes sense to me, right? So that's kind of number two. Number three is a step where they say you start building trust, right? So you've kind of listened without judgment. So they've kind of, yep, okay, this person hears me. Then you've empathized by showing that you see what they're talking about. So they get it. Then you're going to start building trust. And this is where you start to steer the conversation towards common ground. Maybe you identify things that you both know that you agree with. So it's not the main points, but you just kind of set things. Okay, well, okay, I know that's what you're saying, but I guess we can all agree on this. And then you find common ground, right? Because that's the act of building trust. That's where you're saying, listen, I know you came in looking at me like an enemy, but actually, if you think about it, we can kind of get along together. So that's the third stage, is you build trust. Then the fourth is where you start to influence them, right? And so now you start to steer the conversation towards the direction that you want it to go, making a few points here and there, trying to get their agreement on it. And it's kind of steering it towards your point of view and the things you want or things you want to achieve, right? So that's the influence stage. And the final stage, stage five, is where you actually change minds, change behavior. You've earned the trust. You've shifted their mindset. And now you're pushing almost at an open door to get them to agree with what it is you want. So, you know, the classic FBI negotiator stage is, you know, they've really got to understand why it is they got to the situation where they were holding up a bank and taking hostages for money. And eventually you convince them and realize that, you know what? There's no point killing anyone because then everything's going to end. You know what? Why don't you give yourself up and we'll find you a good lawyer and all that stuff in the Hollywood movies, right? So that is where you move to change minds and change behavior. So that's the five steps that FBI negotiators often follow. And you can actually use it too in arguments, especially. I think this is one that I think works in particular well at work or in kind of a business or employment context, to kind of diffuse problems, especially if you're a manager with an employee, diffuse problems, turn them around so that you're going to work together. That's probably one that will take a bit of practice because it is quite difficult to achieve, which is why it's the FBI that does it, right? Not every ordinary person, but nevertheless, it is an approach that you can take and try and use. So that is approach number two. Got five parts to it. Okay, let's get to number three. And this one you'll be more familiar with. It will seem really insidious, but nevertheless, it is a valid argument technique. And number three is get personal, right? Get personal. There's a quote by Cicero, who was an ancient Roman orator and a politician and a lawyer, actually. And what he said is this is, when you have no basis for argument, abuse the plaintiff. When you have no basis for an argument, abuse the plaintiff. And basically what it says is, when you just don't have the points or the facts in your favor, then just attack the person itself. Now, I know this sounds bad, right? I know this sounds terrible that I'm advising you to do this. Remember, this is just about winning arguments, right? This is not about, you know, changing the world and being a better place. This is just pure naked victory, right? And what it is this is, very often you will be on the wrong side of the issue, right? Now, your higher instincts should tell you, well, give ground, concede, accept it, right? And for all of those you, for all you out there who you are better people than me, go down that route. It is the best route to go. But for the 10% of you that are a bit like me and kind of don't like giving ground on anything, when you don't have anything good to argue on, any substantive points to argue on, just attack the person that's making the argument with you. What you're doing is this. You're trying to get in their heads. You're trying to get them emotional, because when we are emotional, we can't be rational. When we can't be rational, we can't make our points with as much force and as much structure and as much impact as when we are just emotional and we kind of lose our heads a bit. So you're trying to put them off their game. You know, if you think about it in the context, well, think about at the time I'm recording this, you've got the impeachment proceedings against President Trump. If you look at what the Republicans are doing, they're basically doing everything but looking at the substance of the issues itself. They're attacking the process. They're attacking the Democrats and the people leading it. They're attacking the whistleblower who created the who kind of revealed the problem in the first place, right? They're doing everything to attack everything else but the substance. And you may say it doesn't work. That might be because you're somebody who doesn't like Trump. But I'll bet you that if you are somebody who does like him, they are giving everything those people need in order to feel, yes, they're right. This is just a witch hunt and all of that, right? It's abusing the plaintiff, essentially, as Cicero said. Attack the people because the arguments themselves don't work at all. It is an effective strategy. It's nasty. So again, I'm not advocating this is the way you go about your lives, but it is effective, and you can do it kind of to a lesser extent, so it's not so nasty, right? You basically challenge the integrity of the person making the argument. You put them on the defensive. So instead of going onto the strong ground where they have the the facts to suit their point, right? You're putting them on the defensive where their integrity is attacked and they're having to defend themselves. And as much as they're having to defend themselves, it means they're not attacking you, which means you may be able to come away the better on the argument. If you can put it onto, you know what, you're just not being genuine. This isn't, you know, this is a bad faith argument. You, last time this happened, we proved that you were wrong, that kind of thing. You just make it all about the person, not the issue, and you may have better chance to succeed if the facts are not in your favor. So that is approach number three. Get personal, abuse, attack. Oh my goodness, this is nasty. Hope you guys are still with me. For those of you who are still with me, cool, it means that you're a little bit dangerous like me. For everybody else who kind of clicked off at this stage, my apologies. See you in the next episode. Okay, so approach number four. With approach number four is basically, it's called, or the idea is you exaggerate and then you stay there, right? So you exaggerate and then you stay there. So what this is you take the position that the person is saying, right? And you take it to its logical extreme, because very often, even if an argument or a point of view seems okay on the face of it, on the surface, when you take it to the extreme, you do this to test whether it's a viable proposition, it's a viable point, it's a point that makes sense in all situations. But very often when you take things to the extreme, it can reveal flaws in that argument, or it can reveal problems with the position the person is taking. So let me give the classic situation that all of us, I'm sure, have had at some point. Somebody will have said this to you at some point, usually your parents or whatever it is, right? So, you know, let's say, you know, you're a kid and you've done something because all your friends did it, or you want, you know, a video game because all your friends are playing it, right? And what is the first thing that the parent says, or the guardian, or the person looking after, what do they say, right? So if all your friends jumped off a cliff, would you follow them and jump off as well, right? Now, it's a ridiculous response if you think about it, right? But all it's doing is taking the point to the logical extreme. The child has said, I want it because my friends want it. So does that mean you do everything your friends want? Would you jump off a cliff, right? So you take it to the extreme to expose the inherent flaws in the point or the argument that's being made. And then you stay there. That's the second part, right? So you've really got to commit to this. You do the exaggeration, take it to the extreme, and then you stay at the extreme and keep arguing about the extreme, because the extreme is always indefensible. So you make it as though, yes, I hear what you're saying, but because this is what it really means, let's talk about what it really means, that extreme point, and argue about it and see if they can defend it. And you keep focusing on that extreme. Again, this is not very pleasant, by the way, but you keep focusing on that extreme. Oh my goodness, there's a doorbell. I'm not going to answer that. You know, as I told you, gosh, this is terrible. I told you I do my episodes all in one, right? And I've turned everything else off of my Wi-Fi, my phone, and there's my doorbell gone. But I'm going to keep plowing on. The postman, whoever it is, will have to do whatever they want to do. That is my commitment to you guys, my great communicators. So that's what you've got to do. You've got to take it to the extreme and stay there and force them to have to argue about the extremeness of their point. And it will make it hard for them to justify. It will again put them off their game, and you're much more likely to succeed and win the argument as a result. So that is step number four, or approach number four, which is about exaggerating their point, taking it to its logical extreme furthest point, and then keeping the argument focused on that logical extreme. They will find it very, very difficult to justify it. And point number five, or approach number five, is the one I like to call the Jedi mind trick, right? So Jedi mind trick, for those of you who aren't kind of sci-fi fans like me, I'm a Trekkie, but I do watch Star Wars as well. So Obi-Wan Kenobi is kind of a master Jedi in the Star Wars series. Kind of showed what was called the Jedi mind trick. It's basically for those who are a little bit weak-minded, you can go into their minds and make them think what you want them to think. So the classic thing is there was some stormtroopers looking for some droids, and Obi-Wan Kenobi sees them, and you can see the droids right there in the car, and he says, "These aren't the droids you're looking for." And the stormtrooper says, oh yeah, these aren't the droids we're looking for. Go on, keep going. And that's the classic example of the Jedi mind trick. Look it on, up on YouTube if you not familiar with it or you don't believe me. So the classic Jedi mind trick is basically to make somebody else think that your idea was theirs, right? So it's a way of kind of circumventing the argument, going round the argument, just by essentially implanting an idea that you have into their heads. This is really tricky to do, but it is effective. So essentially, the way to achieve this is to help them visualize the position that you want them to be in. You basically personalize it to them. So whatever it is you want, you help them see their place in it. You make it relevant to them personally, and then they're much more likely to take it on board for themselves and see the logic of your position for themselves, see the benefits of the of your position for themselves, and then essentially convince themselves that that's the right thing to do. Right. So a classic example is I'm watching The Apprentice at the moment. I don't know if you guys do, but it's a great one for all sorts of reasons. So The Apprentice is, very often the climax of The Apprentice, but one of the key points in The Apprentice is when you've got the team together, they've got a project to do and they have to decide who's going to be the project manager. Now that's really important because whoever's the project manager, if they lose, that person could be kicked out of the whole process by whoever it is, Sir Alan Sugar or Donald Trump or whoever's kind of the lead business person in The Apprentice, right? And there's often a point where there's two people who want to be the leader and they're going head to head and it's like, no, I want to be the leader because of this, and say, no, I want to be the leader because of that, right? So you have two people arguing about it and they very often don't see eye to eye. Sometimes other people have to vote. But here's a way that they could actually achieve getting what they want and making the other person feel like it was their idea. So let's say one of them says to the other, you know, something like, well, look, I know you want to be the lead, right? But the thing is that I know that, you know, that you're the one with the most marketing experience. So I actually wanted you to be the sub team leader because I can't do marketing and you can. And this team, this project is going to be won by the marketing, right? So if I'm leader, I have to deal with all the personality issues between, you know, how Chris and Sandra are always bickering and that's always a headache to manage. So I'll deal with all of that. And that allows you to lead on marketing because you're far better at that than me. And therefore we're much more likely to win the task, right? So simple example of where you're giving to the other person, you're helping the other person visualize, you're helping the other person visualize what it would be like if they did what it is that you wanted them to do, right? And so suddenly the other person is thinking, yeah, you know what? I am the best person for marketing. And yeah, I don't want to have to deal with those people constantly bickering. And yeah, if we lose, it's going to be your head on the block as project manager rather than mine. So yeah, I think you're right. You should be project manager, right? You see, it's a really simple approach. I've seen one person do that actually in kind of a few seasons ago. Nobody else has taken it on board. I have no idea why. But that is effective. So all it is you are presenting them a scenario or a situation that helps them visualize what it would be like for them if your point succeeded. And as long as, especially if you make that attractive for whatever reason, they will often turn around and agree with your point, see the force in what you're saying as though it was their idea. And that way you get what you want, which is the objective of every argument, right? You want to win. You want to destroy. You want to come out as the victor. So that is approach number 5, the Jedi mind trick. Try it. It does work. Again, it's quite hard to achieve. What you don't want to do is to come up against somebody who's listened to this podcast as well, right? So make sure that, you're using it on people who don't really listen to me or follow what I do. If you want to read more about this, because I know that very often you guys do, I've also written an article on it at greatspeech.co/win-arguments. I'll put the link in the show notes so you can just click on it. Then you can save it so that the next time you've got an argument or you know that one's coming up, you can just quickly run and read this and choose which approach you're going to use. Try it out and succeed with your argument. Hope you guys like that one. kind of just me and you this week, which I always love a lot, always a bit of fun. Let me know what you think. Send some feedback. You can email me, you can tweet me, you can LinkedIn me, do all sorts of stuff, whichever way to get hold of me. And of course, you can leave a review with what you think about the podcast, what you think about this episode. It does not have to be positive. If you disagree with me, or if you tried one of these and you got shot, you can, I'm not going to accept liability, right? Because I'm putting a disclaimer. This is all without liability on my part, but you can kind of let me know how it went. Tell me why it didn't work and I will apologize on air. So hope you guys enjoyed that episode. Next episode is going to be, I'm going to go back to an interview. Got a great one actually on how to communicate when you are looking for a new job, which is really interesting. Something that I have absolutely no knowledge and experience of at all. So I think that will be a really interesting one for you guys as well. So hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you for staying with me. As always, I shall say goodbye in a different language. I realized that I hadn't done Spanish, which is quite funny because I was starting to think, my goodness, what other languages are there? And I realized I had not done Spanish. So for all you Spanish people or Spanish speakers out there, I shall say goodbye with adios. Adios, my great communicators. See you on the other side. Adios.